If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Scott and Keith are Twitter peeps, yeah. Keith and Scott are Twitter peeps, oh yeah. They're gonna talk about sweet, sweet RPGs.
And it's the Twitter peeps. The RPG Podcast. Am I getting paid for this one?
Everybody, welcome back to the next episode of Titter Pigs. This is episode 16 and we are rocking it. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to us ramble on. We've got an exciting topic in our main segment, but before we get to that, we need to talk about what is new with us. Scott.
Yeah, what's new with me? I mean, what, maybe gaming-wise, maybe gaming news, you know, who knows? This is going to change, you know, time to time, and it's obviously going to date our episodes because, you know, depending what's happening now, it's going to may or may not be relevant in the future. But for now, what is new with me
is... So, Scott,
is,
before, what in the last 24 hours has... And this is a term that I that you used off air that just I got to use it now. So in the last 24 to 36 hours, what's trending that has tickled your pickle?
Yes. Well, something that I feel that I may have helped trend on Twitter is, okay, so let's start with, you know, the very beginning. I woke up yesterday and there is an advertisement on Facebook. And like, you know, people who utilize Facebook, this is nothing new. It's that people advertise so much stuff. Like social media, they tailor it to your search options, you know, your search history, whatever the case may be. Long story short, D&D Beyond. You know, D&D Beyond, came out with an advertisement for Dragonlance. Dragonlance is essentially, apparently, is just about ready to drop from Wizards of the Coast. And for those who are not aware, D&D Beyond is no longer a third-party company, but they are currently owned by Wizards of the Coast. And so, you know, part of their thing is to have a mutual advertisements in regards to new properties, you know. WotC's going to say, hey, Dragonlance is coming. D&D Beyond is also going to do that. Well, yesterday morning, there was an advertisement I saw, and it has, you know, the typical WotC artwork. It's kind of like, nothing big, but that's nothing new. That's not going to make me, you know, stop and pause. Announcing, you know, the world of Dragonlance was, you know, something I knew about, nothing big. But their selling line, or I guess their headline was, welcome to the world of Kieran. Wait, what?
I'm sorry.
Not just in the header, but also in the link below. I did copy and paste a picture of it and shared it on Twitter.
Oh my God, it's beautiful too.
And made kind of like a little skit of it. Here, I should have it up. Yeah, okay. So essentially the skit was WotC. Okay, so Spelljammer did not come off as well as we hoped, so we want everyone to work extra hard to make sure we show everyone we are treating Dragonlance, a well-loved, you know, property, a classic property. There's many people who are fans of it and will continue to be fans of it. With respect and dissuade any worries. Hey, you are the new ones here, D&D Beyond. You got this? And my response in the little skit was D&D Beyond. Indubitably. We got it, boss. We've got this covered. We're D&D Beyond, man. We know what we're doing here. And so the advertisement was, bring Karen to your table, K-Y-R-N-N, with below, repeating that in the actual link. What?
That is crazy, man. Somebody's going to lose their job over that PR faux pas.
Oh, God. I mean, and it's just skyrocketed from there. Not just from me and people sharing this thing, but other people have, saw the same thing. And they let it ride throughout, well over 24 hours.
It's gone now.
Reissuing it. Yeah. But they reissued it hours later with new artwork. And until finally, I think after it started trending yesterday, they finally took it down and fixed it. But the damage was done. And I guess my point here is, classic settings from Dungeons & Dragons is something that people want for 5e. The old grognards do. The younger generation are looking for something that's, new and different to play in. And there's an interest in these things. Dark Sun, Dragonlance, Greyhawk, Spelljammer. Excuse me, I just threw up a little in my throat. But they really dropped the ball with Spelljammer. And so people are like crossing their fingers, hoping, okay, come on, guys, you got this. You learn from your mistakes. Treat Dragonlance with respect and bring us the world that we were expecting, not just the old guys, but even the new guys who felt like what they did with Spelljammer was a piece of crap also. So out of the gate was this flow.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's pretty much that's in a very large and long nutshell. That's what's new with me in the gaming world and or gaming news. So, good times. And it's still trending and it's still people are commenting. And I want to add before we go on to what's new with you. Just about an hour ago, one of the co-creators of Dragonlance, Margaret Weiss, popped on there, and her comment was, oh, dear God, no. So when the creator of this world pops on there and sees her creation treated with this type of respect and dignity, and her response is that, you may want to hold off on that pre-order. Maybe wait till it comes out to see if it's similar to... what Spelljammer was, and then go from there. So yeah, so that's what's new with me. So Keith, what's been up with you, or what's new with you?
Wow, I was gonna mention a game I played this past weekend, but I think I'm gonna switch gears. And since we're talking about news, and you were talking about bring out your Karens or whatever, it kind of reminds me of bring out your dead. Ooh. So that's my my lead into the crazy bananas Kickstarter that launched today, as of this recording anyways, for the Monty Python role-playing game. And holy moly, they're coming close to $750,000 already in less than 24 hours. Wow. It was like 600 and something thousand just before we started recording. Oh yeah, they're over $500,000, trending up to $750,000 before I eat dinner tonight. 2,500 backers. It's bananas. A comedy game designed to be a comedy game and replicate the shenanigans and the shticks and all of that stuff of Monty Python. I'm a Monty Python fan. I've got the entire Flying Circus on DVD. I've got almost all of the movies, some of the live stuff on DVD. I wouldn't trade the stuff for the world. I don't know. I'm probably going to back it. I like the spoofy bits. I just don't know how it's going to come off as a game, though.
There's a couple. I ended up backing it this morning, and this was even before it hit its Kickstarter goal. So wow.
Yeah.
I've been listening to a couple podcasts of them describing it in the game, and out the door when it was first announced, I primarily thought it was going to be a focus on just Holy Grail material, but it's their entire library.
Oh yeah, it's the entire library. I just pulled it up. It's at present, it's 4,794 backers at $624,000.
Oh wow!
And it's only been launched for less than 12 hours as of this recording right here, right now. So that's crazy.
So yeah, so you tell me what your opinion of it is. But one of the things that some friends of mine mentioned is it's an intentionally humorous game. Games that are meant to be humorous, not due to what occurs in the game, but the game itself. Like what Tune is one that kind of pops in my head. I'm trying to think of some other ones that are actually strictly built upon being humorous as the primary goal.
Look at. More narrative, but still meant to be funny storytelling is Extraordinary Adventures of Baron Munchausen, or Princess Bride, not necessarily funny, but kind of skit-like and shtick and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, a shtick. Yeah. I think that's a good word. And so, like, some friends of mine, like, they're on the fence because, you know, their experience has been if a game is, if an RPG is intentionally funny, you know, they don't normally turn out to be during play, whether it seems forced or it just doesn't seem to be natural in the humor as right. it's played out. But you did mention one that that may contradict that, and that's Baron Munchausen.
Right.
Because, you know, it's, I don't think it's, there's, it's a different kind of humor.
It is. And it's an imposed by the players in how they craft their story, their narratives through play. Right. That's where the comedy element comes in, with them chiding each other into telling crazier and crazier stories that are all interconnected in some crazy, strange way. This, I don't know. I've got to finish reading through the Kickstarter. The pitch video is like the opening to the Holy Grail, you know, Flying Circus.
Yeah.
More Flying Circus than Holy Grail, but it's intentionally playing up the nostalgia and the silliness and the puns. And so I don't know. I got a feeling I'm going to probably lean towards your friend's assessment, but you know what? Yeah. I've been wrong before. So, I'm going to read through all the material and then make an informed decision based on what they're pitching at me as a consumer, and we'll go from there.
Right. I think we may not be erring too much on the side of caution that this might be kind of like the Avatar RPG, where the fans are buying it, the collectors are buying it, but it once it arrives, it may be just on the shelf as a collector's item and may never be played. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, because I mean, yeah, as I said, I'm a fan of Monty Python and all things Monty Python. So, I mean, they might have me because of that. Yeah. I don't know.
So, I mean, I own a bottle of their Holy Grail beer. It's not that.
No, it's not.
So it's sat in the fridge for a very long
Iron
time.
Iron Maiden's Trooper's much better. just saying from experience. So anyways, that's I wanted to piggyback off of the kind of the news as for what's new with me. There's other things, but we don't need to drone on about all that. So
nope. I think we've done a fine job just kind of, you know, catching up. So without further ado, why don't we see about rolling into our next segment?
So Scott, we're gonna dive right in. We are going to entertain our listeners this evening with player etiquette, and I think our general tips and tricks to be a better player at the table. And we all know that there are bookshelves, small gamer libraries dedicated to how to be a better GM, how to write a better scenario, how to do this, how to do that. But most everything is from the Game Master's perspective, and very little is for the player.
Right.
Let's face it. You're a player. I'm a player. Everybody's a player as much as we are Game Masters, too. Mm-hmm. There are things players can do coming to the table to make their experience better and those around them.
Right. Right. There's a lot of things with that. And I've seen some comments because I threw it out into Twitter. And granted, I do believe in, you know, one of the ones was, you know, it's about communication. It can be, but it does need to be more than that. And a couple people did also throw out the old rule of, oh, you're drinking water now. I was trying to toss you a softball, but the sun got in your eyes. The rule you mentioned earlier.
Oh, the Will Wheaton rule.
Yes, which is?
Don't be a dick.
Right. And again, just like it's all about communication and not being a dick, that's a part of it. But hopefully we're going to touch on some things here, like you said, that may inform you, may also even hopefully maybe turn a mirror on you. Because I think there's a lot of people out there, especially players who may not have never run a game before, that may not have recognized some of the bad habits that they're displaying at the table because they haven't been confronted about it yet. And so I know there's people out there right now shouting, well, what about the DM? The DM should be, you know, bringing this to their attention. Hey, there's enough stuff out there for GMs and DMs, like he said. This is player time. So grab yourself a nice hot cup of cocoa, take a couple chill pills, wrap up into that nice weighted blanket while we talk about player etiquette now. All right.
Amen.
So, all right. So where do we want to dive in? Because, you know, we've talked about, you know, from since the dawning of RPGs, there's been this kind of like division, you know, from GMs and players. You know, it used to be the GM, the DM was supposed to be up on a pedestal, and the players were just, you know, these little peasants there to enjoy the game that the GM was providing. Over time, the you know, the weights you know, have shifted. They've been brought closer together. You know, GMs and DMs are now players now, to be considered in the same high light and values as regular players.
Yeah.
And so on. So, but with all of this done and all of this progressive nature that's been kind of you know, accomplished over the years, you still see and read horror stories about GMs and DMs from players who, to be perfectly honest, shouldn't be making these mistakes if they were actually doing the due diligence of being a good player.
Oh, absolutely.
So I
think a good jumping off point for this entire conversation, mm-hmm, is first and foremost, gaming at the table, bar none, all the players and the game master or facilitator or director, whatever the term, storyteller, whatever the term is for the particular game being played, right? For our purposes, it's just going to be game master, right?
Right.
It's a social contract. It is a social event. Everybody is there socially, whether it's online or face-to-face, but everybody is there socially. So this is a social event,
mm-hmm,
and therefore there is some type of social contract that has to be established. It's obviously not a written contract, let's face it, unless you are doing some of the safety tool things that could be construed as some written lines and veils and things like that. And that's all great. However, there are some player-facing parts of a social contract that, in terms of expectations, that I think sometimes players just completely either are oblivious to, blatantly ignore, or just were not aware of.
Right.
You know, first and foremost, right off the top of my head, be on time. If you are playing in a game, whether it's online or face-to-face, most of these talking points can be applied to either. Be on time. Don't stroll into your game 5 minutes late, 10 minutes late. You are now impacting the play experience of everybody.
Right.
That game master and, in theory, the other players have prepared and are ready to go. And if you stroll in 5 minutes late, you are now upsetting the apple cart, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so again, that Will Wheaton rule of don't be a dick applies right there, right out the gate.
Right. I think you bring up a good point right there, because let's not misconstrue what we're here to talk about. We're not talking about, you know, GMs versus players and how players can be better, you know, conduct themselves better for the game masters, which to a degree that is going to be part of it. But like you said, it is a social contract, a circle of people, and being a better player is not just learning how to respect, read, anticipate, and even help pick out a GM, but also be aware of the people you're playing with at the same time.
Correct.
So, yeah. All right. So,
yeah.
What's another thing that you feel, you know, would that you would bring to someone's attention in something such as this?
And just because I've seen it as a player and as a game master, both real space games, like at home, online, at conventions, both online and in real space, just being prepared. Players will come to a table, even if they're on time early, and they're just not prepared.
Right.
I don't know how you go to a game convention, like a role-playing only game convention, in real space and don't even bring dice. I mean, unless this is your first absolute game, you know, first game convention, I get it. And if you're early and you tell your game master or the other players, hey, this is my first game convention, I don't have any dice, you know, be open and honest about it. People will loan you dice. I mean, people are super helpful, but you got to be open and, you know, going back to what we said earlier, you know, communication, right?
Right.
But just being prepared, you know, goes along with being on time. But being prepared is like being there, seated virtually too, you know, ready to go, ready to play. You know, you have your character sheet. If you need a pencil, you have a pencil. If you don't have one, you've asked for one. You don't wait until you're 10 minutes in and need a pencil going, Hey, does anybody have a pencil I can borrow?
Right.
Or dice or whatever other bits and bobs you need.
Mm-hmm.
Or go, oh, I have to run to my hotel room because I'm at a convention and I forgot something for the game. I've had that happen to me too.
So piggybacking off of that, mm-hmm. I feel, yes, being prepared is something that not just is important material-wise, but also game and character-wise. I don't know how many times, you know, you've either heard, read, or even been involved with, you know, hey, Tony, what does your wizard Garkle do? He casts, you know, the fifth level spell. What's it called? The thing that deals with sand and transmutation and maybe it's disintegration. Okay. You don't know your spells. Nah, can't be bothered. You know, that's your job as a GM to tell me what my stuff does. No. Your job as a player is to be prepared to know and articulate your responsibility for the rules that you're playing within. The GM's job is to tell you the outcome of that to a certain degree and also adjudicate and make sure the rules are being properly followed. But you're the one that should be knowing what your player character can or can't do, is capable of, the description of the stuff that he's involved in, skill, magic spells, whatever the case may be. But know the game. Know your character. Know them inside and out when you're there at the table. We're not perfect. We're going to forget stuff. But don't just show up there literally only knowing what your character's name is and nothing else about them.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I am helping to teach my 11-year-old granddaughter old school essentials and fifth edition Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. I expect that with her.
Right.
She's 11. She's mm-hmm. learning. I don't expect that when I have a 40 something or 50 something year old or a 30 something year old who's sitting at my table. Mm-hmm. That's a regular player.
Right.
This isn't we're not talking about a convention game. I kind of expect some of that in a convention game.
Of course. Of course.
Right. That's why as a game master, I give them handouts and aids so they know what it does.
Right.
But as a long-term player, if you're committed to playing in my game, I expect some level of commitment that I'm giving you as your game master. I expect a similar level of commitment for you to know what it is, what spells your character can do, what powers they have, what things that they can do and how they work. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. You know, plus if you're playing at my house, I expect you to bring beer from time to time. That's just a nice courtesy. That gets bonus XP sometimes.
That's an entire
again, it's a social episode. Contract thing. But I want to piggyback what you said though, just to add on to that about mm-hmm. knowing what the player should know what their character's abilities, traits, skills, things are, and what they do, and how they generally function.
Right.
Because if you don't, and you have to stop the game, like. In the middle of everything mm-hmm. to go, I don't know what my character does.
Right.
You have just impacted everybody else sitting at the table and basically just told them to shove their social contract because you're too lazy to learn what it is your character does.
Right.
Because as a GM, I'm just going to throw this out there. I know we're talking about players, but this does have some bearing. Mm-hmm. And I know this came up when we kind of canvassed Twitter a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
As a game master, my job, your job, any game master's job is to be a facilitator and help provide the entertainment because it's a collective entertainment social event. We're all there together and we're all creating a story together. Mm-hmm. But my job as a game master is not to be the sole provider of your entertainment to where I am going to tell you an entire story, tell you how to interact with that story, then tell you how that interaction happens with that story. Right. And you just sit back and I say, okay, well, this is what you're going to do. Roll dice. If that's what you want, go watch a fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
Read a goddamn book. Yeah. I mean, don't waste my time. Don't waste everybody else's time. There's, again, that social contract. There's a level of commitment. I'm going to get off my soapbox now. Wait, this is a podcast.
This is going to be a giant 45-minute soapbox here for sure. And as you can tell, Keith and I are both game masters and players, so this is going to be coming from both sides of the spectrum here.
Sorry, our pendulum keeps swinging around here.
So you did bring up a good point, and I think it was Matt, Crafty Matt, who kind of brought that out. And to be fair, you do kind of, there's a lot of people out there who look at it as a personal experience, and you see this all the time. My table doesn't do that. I've never seen that happen. I've never witnessed something such as this. And when I see something like, you know, I really hate my game master because he doesn't do this, 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 or this. And everyone's advice is, well, you need to go find a new game master. You know, this is not like, you know, he's an asshole. You know, he's not listening to certain concerns that I have. It's just, he's not living up to my expectations. And yeah. you start reading into this and you start seeing stuff like what you just mentioned, that it's, are they expecting him to be this all-knowing, all-capable artificial intelligence, like a computer game that can just spit out, you know, all of this content just because you wanted to make a left turn at Albuquerque instead of the right turn where the game was leading. So, yeah, I mean, there's and I don't know. OK, so here we go. Speaking of soapbox, I don't know if this is a younger generational thing, because I don't remember conducting that kind of expectations when I was playing, you know, when I was younger, nor do I do it now. But you do see a lot of, you know, complaints about my GM doesn't do what I want him to do within regards to the story that I'm trying to tell. And then,
right.
And you
there's
see
an expectation management problem.
Right.
And that's but that's a player side issue. That's mm-hmm. not a game. Now, right. I'm going to say it's not a game master issue. It can be.
Sure.
So I can hear people listening to this down the road right. going, you son of a bitch.
Right. Right.
No, it definitely can be a game master.
Let me remind you, take another sip of that cocoa, bound yourself up in that weighted blanket a little bit more tighter, because we're dealing with one side. We can always go to the GM side another episode. So yeah,
yes.
Stop
and
the
we
yelling.
Will. We will.
Stop the
and
yelling.
We will.
Okay, sorry, go on.
No, just it's, oh my God. Well, I mean, it's totally an expectation management problem.
Mm-hmm.
Players, and I'm not going to say that it's a younger generational thing or mm-hmm. Us older folks, one side or the other, right?
Right.
I've heard that same bitch, gripe, and complaint along that entire age spectrum.
Okay.
It's, and I think it's comes from they get a perceived notion in their head, mm-hmm. whether it comes from a really well produced Twitch or YouTube stream that they really, really like, or the way a video game that they're really passionate about tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
Or doesn't tell a story and yeah. they want to play, do something different and counter to that. So they come into role-playing games or certain role-playing games with expectations of how it should be or what they want to do differently that they didn't like in from some other form or fashion. And that mm-hmm. becomes their expectation. And when the situation doesn't match,
right.
their expectation management doesn't change. When they realize that the reality that they're involved in isn't meeting their expectations,
right?
And I think that's where the gripes come in. Well, my GM sucks. I hate my GM because they don't do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah,
but it's really 9 times out of 10, it's not a bad GM
because mm-hmm.
most of the other players at the table probably don't have a problem.
Yeah,
it's a single player issue. And it's because of their expectation management and how they want things done.
Mm-hmm.
Again, going back to that social contract.
Right.
And why, God, we keep swinging this pendulum. A session yep. zero
mm-hmm.
Is important for those expectation management concerns.
Right.
A lot of that can be addressed, resolved, or some basic management of it can be done in a session zero.
Yeah.
Just by having a conversation with players.
Yeah. And for those of you out there who cringe, and this is not me, but there's a lot of people out there who cringe at the term session zero. It's just pre-communication. It's the, you know, the moment you meet the people that you're going to be playing with. Hey, this is the game we're going to be playing. This is what it's about. And what do you think? Are you cool with this? Are you not cool with this? This is, you know, as a GM, this is what I'm planning to do with it. This is kind of what I'm expecting it to be like. And these are the type of player characters that would fit well within this. And
right, and character creation
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
if safety tools are being used, which I do recommend,
sure.
That's when they can be addressed. Again, those expectation managements, and that's the foundation of that social contract if right. you if you are setting up a long-term gaming group.
Right. But that's also the opportunity not for just the GM to display yes. you know, everything about the game. That's the opportunity for the player characters to take the onus to start asking questions and bring up concerns.
Yes.
Hey, Keith, there's this cool game called Cult. It's a horror game. Are you interested? And that's where you as a player would probably go, well, what is Cult about? Well, you see, it's this game that involves all sorts of things like, you know, child abuse, murder,
body horror,
you know, things such as that. Oh, no, I'm not into that. Thank you very much. Or I don't have a problem with that. But either way, that's the opportunity for you to say yes or no, I'm in. But I do. Yeah. A lot of people jump into these games just based off of H's general description. And then when they get involved in it, the player characters have this shock and awe, realize it's not for them. And then suddenly it's the GM's fault for not, you know, providing the proper amount of information. Well, it's a two-way street in that regards, you know.
Right. So let's go ahead. No, I was going to say, let's kind of go down that little rabbit hole about learning about the game you're going to be playing, right? If you're making a commitment, so I'm player little Timmy here, and I've decided I'm going to play in little Steve's cult game here, and I don't know much. I've agreed to play cult. You've said, oh, cool. I'm cool with body horror and, I don't know, whatever, running over children with cars, whatever. I'm cool with it.
That's
well, whatever, you know, whatever. However you pitched it, I've agreed to it. So, to go, you know, to just to explore this a little bit more, and this goes back to being good, you know, a better player and player etiquette is back to being prepared, right?
Yeah.
I've committed to your game of cult. So if I've committed to a long-term game, the expectation should be I'm going to make at least a small investment, right? I've went and bought the book, whether physical or digital, doesn't really matter, right? I've invested. If I've said, hey, Scott, I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to play your game.
Right.
I know you're planning to do this campaign. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to be, we're probably going to play several months. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go buy the book. I'm going to go buy the digital. I'm not going to invest in the hardcover, whatever. Because I need to know how this works.
Right.
Right. I am making that investment in our social circle, our social contract. I've purchased the book. I've read about the character options. So when it comes time for like a session zero and to make characters, I am prepared. I know what kind of character I'd like to play. And then I can ask informed questions. Hey, Scott, is it cool if I play this type of archetype in cult?
Right.
And you could say, well, that one's really not going to work with the campaign structure that I've got planned. Mm-hmm. But if you're really set on playing it, I will make it work. This is where, again, social contract, the communication, and being prepared.
Mm-hmm. And be open with that discussion. If you go in prepared, if you're doing something that goes against the grain, and you know it, I mean, most players know it. It's like, I'm going to try something new here. Go in there prepared for your game master to either A, maybe say it's not a good mix, or B, well, maybe no, but... Because if you don't, you're going to be one of those people who are suddenly going to jump on social media and say, my game master is such a dick. He's not, you know, allowing me to be creative within the game, or he said no to this wonderful idea. And a bunch of talking heads pop on there and say, you know, you're right. This is a fantastic concept. What's wrong with him? Go in there and be open with this conversation. And then if it ends up working out, fantastic. But if it's not, at least you were prepared ahead of time because... You know, it's not going to dash your hopes into the ground if you end up having to either modify it, change it, or maybe it just doesn't work, period, because it's just it goes against the theme of, you know, the game. You're not going to have My Little Pony, you know, Princess Sparkle Butt in a game of cult.
Ooh, can I try that in cult next time?
I mean, you might. I mean, granted, it does sound like a fantastic and fun idea, but, you know, that...
Well, it could be a very bad and painful idea, too.
But that joking aside, if I was going to want to display what the game of, like, cult really is meant to be, and you come at with me and say, you know, I want, you know my Little Pony, you know, Mrs., you know, Tinkle Pissy, no, it's not going to represent the game that, you know, because guess what? The GM has an idea of what he's trying to portray also. And he wants you to exist in this somewhat living, breathing world that he's trying to, you know, lay down a foundation for your characters to jump in and make these stories that you're hoping to do within this game. But, you know, you throw a spanner into the works in that, and then suddenly, you know, it's not about the group. Like you said, it's not about the social contract. And, you know, it's about you. Yeah, be considerate, you know, when you're doing a game with your players and the GM. Don't go in there with the intention of, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to wreck it and I'm going to have my own ideas and I'm going to do this and that because, you know, I'm the best fucking RPG player on the planet and I'm going to get Mrs. Tinklepissy in there no matter what.
That's it. That's the name of my next character, Mrs. Tinklepissy.
That's
mark that, my words.
Matron of mystery material right there for sure.
Oh, hell yeah.
So anyways, so I've gone off on a tangent there, I know. Obviously, you know, show me on the DM's guide where the players hurt me. But no, there's, once again, there's a lot of stuff you see out there. And as much as I want to jump on every one of these ridiculous social media threads and go, you do realize you guys are horrible people. You're not in the right. You're in the wrong, but... You know, I just do what you should do and just ignore it and move on. But doesn't mean that it's still not out there.
So if I was your game master and I said, hey, Scott, since we're going to play Cult, I need you to go ahead and read over, since this is some stuff that your character can do, I want you to read over these mechanical elements, you know, in this section of the book.
Right.
What is the expectation? Are you going to read it or are you just going to be like, well, he'll tell me how to do it when I get to it?
For me personally, and I'm just talking about Scott, yes, sure. I'm going to read it. It's either going to happen shortly thereafter our conversation or up to 2 hours before we're playing. But one way or another, you got to be damn sure that I will be reading that. There's no way I'm going to pop into a game if either a player has asked me to do something, let's say we're two players planning something. Or B, the GM asks me to do something that I'm going to go in there and say, you know what, you know, fuck, I forgot. Pending life excuses, of course. Life excuses take precedence. Yeah. But
right. So, again, if anybody's keeping tabs, we kind of seem to have a couple of central themes here.
Yeah.
Be prepared. Don't be a dick. Mm-hmm. This is a social contract between you and the other players, and along with your game master, because they're a player too. So, this goes back to, again, being prepared.
Right.
You know? Have the things you need to play your game at the table, just to recap.
Yep.
You know the rules. Know what your character does. If your GM asks you to read something, read it. Understand it. If you don't understand what they've asked you to read, ask questions. Again, communications. It all kind of comes, everything's coming full circle.
Right.
Can you think of anything else like big rocks, like how, you know, in terms of player etiquette?
So yes, I've been thinking about this. It's been kind of stewing around in my head. We've kind of made this a tennis match as a player lobbing the ball back and forth between player and GM, but we're forgetting the aspect that another important part of being a good player at the table is how you interact with the other players.
Absolutely.
Being aware of the people around you. Just like a GM, you need to be aware of their body language, their personality. You know, there's the typical, you know, types of players. You can go to Seth Skorkowski's video and see the breakdown of, you know, the standards. But, you know, but be aware of the type of players that you're playing with. You know, is there an actor among you? Is there a rules lawyer among you? Is there someone who's not a role player, but a rolling player? And don't look down upon them for what they enjoy most about the game. Don't come on and complain. And I wish Steve would role play more. All he wants to do is roll the dice and deal with the outcome because I'm here to create stories. And Steve just wants to see whether that 20 comes up again. And this, I just don't get it. Well, recognizing what your fellow players enjoy about the game the most is going to make your life a lot easier than trying to butt heads with them and try to make them something they're not. Is there a shy person at your table? Well, don't push them into role playing. You know, don't say, well, you know, you need to come out and describe every aspect, you know, verbatim about what your character's doing. Do you not like people talking in third person? Well, you know, Crazy Larry, he runs up the street. You know, I want them to say I do that because they need to embrace a character. No, nobody needs to do anything. Recognize what your fellow players enjoy most about the game because everyone has it. embrace that. And then your job as a player, just like a GM, is to try to mold yourself within that to create a cohesive, social circle, like you said, rather than, create these speed bumps within them. And I'm sure I didn't touch on everything there, but that's kind of like a basis of, you need to recognize your players also. And
oh, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. So as a player, in terms of etiquette, right, because mm-hmm. etiquette's about behavior and right. interacting with others, you obviously need to respect everybody at the table. Doesn't matter who they are, respect them.
Right.
Right. Especially if they're your long-term player. So being in a convention setting is different. Same, mm-hmm. similar, yet still a little different than being with your home group, right?
Right.
Or a new forming home group. But back to my point about the social etiquette and discussing and with other players and having respect for other players.
Right.
Know your players. Know the players around you, your co-conspirators, as it were, right?
Right.
Know them, especially if they're your long-term group. Start to learn their boundaries.
Right.
And respect those boundaries. Mm-hmm. If something comes up in play and they want to push on that, on a boundary, to kind of put up a new boundary, respect that new boundary that they've put up. Cause obviously something that came up in the narrative is problematic for them. So respect it.
Right.
Whether that's, they don't want to have the full spotlight on them all the time. Unlike, say you, right. Respect that, everybody should be helping to manage the overall game experience, the play experience of each and every person at the table.
Right.
But bottom line is, be respectful of each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shared experience of the entire group. Nobody should be the hog, the spotlight hog. If you do have a wallflower that wants to kind of sit off to the side, because there are people like that, and that's fine.
Yep.
Encourage them to kind of come off the wall. Be respectful about it.
Mm-hmm.
Just be a good human, for God's sakes.
Right.
But don't be antagonistic. Don't, mm-hmm. and it kind of goes both ways too.
Yeah.
Little Timmy wants to just do nothing but roll dice and kill things. And little Janie over there wants to have these long, dramatic narrative, bouts of prose. It can go both ways in terms of, well, I don't like that, and I don't like that.
Right. Don't disengage.
Right.
Know the type of, and there you go. Know the type of player you are also. If you are the one who just likes rolling dice and dealing with combat, do not flip the off switch when they go into, Jennifer's long exposition of role playing. Still be in the moment. If you're a bit shy or a bit of a wallflower, at least when it's your turn and the GM, says it's your time to make a decision at the table, be ready, with something. I know it can be hard sometimes, socially, but at least be ready with something when it's your turn, rather than, I'm fumbling with something. If you're the rules lawyer, don't be a dick. There's nothing wrong with making the actual correction if there's a bit of a mistake, but don't spout off shit left and right for every little thing.
Yeah.
And lastly, if you are the role player, do not hog the spotlight. Do not step on other people's toes. Do not step on people when they're trying to do something. Do not jump in when it's not your turn. Do not roll dice unless the GM tells you to.
Oh my God. I can't reiterate that enough.
Please.
We're just going to put that in a loop, a 5-minute loop for everybody. No, I'm just kidding. So we've taught, so we've got these big rocks, right? On how to, on player etiquette,
mm-hmm.
How not to be a dick,
right?
being prepared, social contracts and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So we've kind of identified some things, right?
Right.
Let's give listeners additional things that they can do to improve.
Sure.
So we can end this segment on an up note, right? An upbeat.
Absolutely. And enough grinding people into the ground with our own personal judgment on how
we love all of you.
Oh, yeah. It's do not do as I do. Do as I say. Right? Okay.
Right.
No, because we are perfect. Just admit it. Okay. Stop recording now. That's what we'll put on the loop. But no. So anyway. So, yes, you've got some things that maybe we could, focus on the positive, improvement, not just don't do this, but here's what you can do to be better.
I'll throw one out. Okay. every January, mm-hmm. commit yourself to trying 5 new games.
Ah.
As a player, find a way to play as a player 5 new role-playing games you have never played before.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter if they're storytelling games, something fantasy, something sci-fi. Bleh. But I've done it. I've done it.
Yes, you have. I've witnessed it several times.
Even a sci-fi like spaghetti western. Ooh.
Yeah, everyone's got to eat their broccoli. Everyone's got to eat their broccoli every once in a while.
And Keith did. But try playing 5 new games. And the reason I'm suggesting that is, A, it will allow you as a player to broaden your potential field of interests, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to help identify things you like and things you don't like in terms of genres, mechanics, experience types,
mm-hmm.
Things of that nature. And it will also help you to identify specific games that, nope, I don't like this game. I'm not, if I have the chance to come up to play it again, I'm not going to play it.
Right.
Or find new, you know, you may find your new favorite game.
You also may find that there, even though player etiquette is universal, there's different etiquette per different game, you know, how you
True
conduct
story.
Yourselves within that game. So, broaden your horizons. I absolutely 100% agree with you. Playing D&D and running D&D is not the same as running Call of Cthulhu and playing Call of Cthulhu.
Right.
Or any other game out there. So if you're sticking to just one specific game, it's not going to be a universal trait that will be applied everywhere. Broaden your horizons, be flexible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And to piggyback with that, and then I'll pass the mic back to you, but to piggyback on that, make sure that the games are different, but also make sure if you can try to play them with different players, with other players, mm-hmm. Other game masters and other players. Again, it's for that experience. You broaden your social circles, your social network, right?
Right.
You find new players that you like gaming with. You find new players you don't like gaming with. You find great game masters. You find not so great game masters, and your social circle expands and contracts and expands and contracts and, you know, kind of weeds itself in a sense. But at the same time, you get to learn what other personality types are that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
If you play with just the same 5 or 6 people all the time, online or face-to-face, you kind of stovepipe yourself in your experiences. And when you do get potentially a rare chance to expand out, It's kind of shocking. So mm-hmm. if you have the goal every year of playing new games and playing those same new games with new players when possible,
right?
It's not always possible, but when possible, socially you grow too.
I'm gonna go with the suggestion that you had on your blog. You know, Keith did touch on this to a degree on rolling boxcars, but I'm gonna add on to it. So one of the things I was suggesting, and I agree with this, is a journal of your gaming experiences. Now, of course, not everyone's a writer. Not everyone's, you know, a journalist or, you know, whatever the term is for writing in a journal. I don't know if I have that correct, because journalist has...
Journaler.
Yeah.
Journalist is different.
But we are in a grand age of technology. You don't have to write this down on Microsoft Word. You don't have to put it in your My Little Pony diary with Mrs. You know, Twinkle Pissy. What the hell is her name? I forget.
Twinkle Pissy?
But maybe you don't even have to do a Let's Play, but maybe record a session. You know, if you're playing online, record it every once in a while. Or just, you know, record it verbally, like with Audacity. Just like listening to you and your buddies, you know, making silly recordings, and you listen to yourself later and you realize, holy crap, what an idiot I was. Hearing yourself engage with others, whether it be through the visual medium or through a recording, may kind of, you know, address some things that may have needed some work or that you've worked on and improved upon and recognized on your own. Recording your experiences, whether it be writing it down, or visually or, you know, audially recording these things, not only capture the details of the game, but, you know, point out things that you may miss and other people may miss. And plus, it sounds like fun. You know, can you imagine at the end of the year, you know, the few games that you and I played in with everyone, and we sit down and we actually watch ourselves
oh my God.
After a couple beers, how funny that would be, and how everyone would just, you know, be able to, you know, laugh at themselves and poke fun at each other. And then eventually, once it's all done, we delete it for all eternity from our computers. So,
hell yeah.
But no, but so whatever way possible, a way to reflect upon yourself, you know, if that's in your wheelhouse, you know, this is more for people who are, you know, a little bit more hardcore gamers who are really into role-playing games and whatnot. But if you're looking to improve yourself as a player, having some sort of reflection of your past self is a surefire way to point out some flaws or whatnot and improve upon them. Because we can't rely on our own memories. Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, everything I've done, there's been no fault. And when I close my eyes and I look back at myself, all I see is a shining example of me through and through. Yeah.
Well, so on that happy note, listeners, we're going to wrap up this segment because we wanted to end on a positive note. And well, Scott is the apex of awesome. So we're gonna roll on out of here.
Oh, not so fast. That's But yeah. So that's.
Sorry, false alarm.
Oh, no. So do you have anything else, though? Do you have anything else that, you know, that would be a positive tool that they can roll with?
Just expand your horizons, try to grow as a person, both in terms of the way you interact with your fellow players, being courteous, being respectful, finding and knowing boundaries of those around you and, you know, respecting those and being vocal, politely vocal about your boundaries and conveying those and being open to other people. You do that by just having different experiences. So again, I go back to play some new games with some new people. That helps you, in my opinion, that helps you grow as a person, as a gamer. And it just brings, in the end, makes you a better player, gives you hopefully better social skills.
Right.
And a better play experience for all involved at the table, especially if everybody's doing that.
Excellent. Excellent. So we'll be conducting a seminar here, the Titterpigs Be a Better Player seminar, at Lake Tahoe next year. So, send us your checks and, you know, next winter, bring some skis and, you know, we'll have a symposium and
you can find Keith on a bunny slope. Cause, I don't ski, but it's okay.
Actually, just send us your money. We'll figure it out later.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I didn't mean to step on your toes for closing it out. So do you want to bring us out to our closing segment, Keith?
I would just like to say, you know, hey, thanks for listening to us on our soapbox. It's something I've written several articles on Rolling Boxcars, about social contracts, being a better player, being a better GM. It's something I'm kind of vocal about and kind of passionate about because I've been on both sides of the screen in different environments and I've seen a lot of crazy shenanigans. So... Mm-hmm. Again, Will Wheaton's rule applies. We'll close it out with that. Don't be a dick.
Like, don't be a dick.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Titterpigs. Give us a follow at Titterpigs on Twitter, join our Facebook group, or drop us an email at titterpigs@gmail.com. Cheers, everyone.